Has the gospel become too politicized in America today?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Hey, friends, thanks for tuning into The Line of Fire. This is Michael Brown. I'm not taking your calls today, but I have a colleague, Messianic Jewish leader, lawyer, a colleague in Israel. We're going to be having a lively discussion about evangelicals in America, followers of Jesus in America. Have we become too politicized? Has that now come to a head with the evangelical support of Donald Trump? Has that hurt the gospel more than it has helped the gospel? Jamie Cowan is presently a partner in Cohen, Decker, Pax, and Brosh Law offices in Tel Aviv. He served as a Messianic rabbi in Israel, in the States. He's been president of Russian Immigration Services in Richmond, Virginia, president of the Union of Messianic Jewish Congregations. Back in the late 70s, mid-80s, he was chief counsel to U.S. Senate subcommittee and assistant to the majority whip of the U.S. Senate. So he's got a lot of experience within government, and then as a leader in ministry, now a lawyer and a Messianic Jew in Israel. And Jamie and I have known each other for decades. We just got back in touch recently because of some conversation we were having about these very issues. But Jamie, welcome to The Line of Fire. Thanks for joining us. When did you find out about your family history and how your name became Cowan?
Well, that's a good question. I was born Cohen, C-O-H-E-N, Jewish name, but my father, when I was 2 years old, he changed it to Cowan because he was going into politics. And, I found out probably, when I was late, maybe early teens or even before that, had been Cohen, but he explained why I was Cowan. In the 1950s, when he went into politics, being a Jew and American politics was not common and not popular, and potentially it could be potentially a source of discrimination. So that was the reason for the name change, and that was it.
Now in Israel, are you Cohen, or are you still Cowan?
Yeah, I am Cohen. That's a whole other story, which would take up a whole other broadcast about how that all happened. It's not really worth it, but yes, I'm Cohen in Israel.
Yeah. As I was introducing you, I said, wait a second. When I was looking at, partner in Cohen Decker, wait a second. So yeah, the light went on for me. So Jamie, you were very much involved in the political scene. I remember newsletters that you would put out while you were in ministry, and you would talk about the issues in the society, talk about cultural issues. I don't remember you endorsing candidates, but I do remember you talking about issues, but you feel that we've become way too politicized in America. So explain what you feel is the problem and how it's come to a head with Donald Trump.
Yeah, it's great. Great question. You know, I was, like you said, I was working in the Congress from the mid 70s until the mid 80s. And, when I was there is when the Moral Majority was formed. I mean, it was formed in 1979. And I remember its formation very, very well. I remember a number of the evangelical leaders who were involved with it, and they were making it, basically raising up kind of a political force to affect cultural change in America. And I was really disturbed. I felt like it was going to have a negative backlash. I see the gospel as being something quite different and transformational in and of itself without forcing through legislation and stuff, which can really backfire. And then I ultimately, a few years later, in the early 80s, Pat Robertson was up to see my boss, the senator, and I was able to have dialogue with him personally and privately about the issues because Pat Robertson had become increasingly more political. In the early years, he really wasn't, even though his father was a U.S. senator earlier. And I dialogued with him, and I just told him, I said, I think this is a big mistake. I think it's just going to ultimately really backfire and so on. I mean, he didn't share my view at all, especially in light of the fact that he ended up running for president a few years later. But over the years, I've just really seen this happen. It was in 1990 when I took over the congregation in Richmond, Virginia. And really all those years, 22 years, I never spoke about politics at all, even though I had more political background really than anybody there. I just didn't do it. I didn't feel it was appropriate. You know, I encouraged people to vote, but that was about it. The one time where I spoke to the subject was during the Obama election, the first Obama election, 2008, when a lot of negative things were being said about Obama and they were starting to creep into the congregation. In other words, just, you know, it was creating division. And so I spoke, I gave a talk called The Religion and Politics, and just focused on the history of religion and state, religion and politics, and how that has really created some very serious problems throughout history. And that really, I really think the constitutional writers had a good idea in mind of keeping church and state separate, but of providing for freedom of worship. And, you know, the United States is quite a religious country. It's great. So it calmed things down, I think, in our congregation. But, you know, we moved to Israel in 2011, and things just got more progressively heated in the United States. And it's culminated in the election of Donald Trump. And wow, it's just really, I mean, I don't have to tell anybody, your listeners, I mean, it's just like everything's on fire and it's just like crazy.
Right. So let me just jump in, and we want to flesh this out, because in a lot of ways, Jamie and I absolutely agree, totally agree. And I could point to things I've written for years saying that our hope is in the gospel and the Great Commission, not in government. And yet I do believe we have some areas of difference. So we want to flesh these things out. But Jamie, I was not focused on Moral Majority or anything back in those days, but James Robison, who's a dear friend of mine now, was with them in the early days with Jerry Falwell and all those. He didn't like the name Moral Majority, and he was concerned that it would become an appendage of the Republican Party. And in certain ways, that has happened. And yes, the association of a group with a political party can be very damaging. But let me just back this up and ask philosophically, if you would have had the exact same standpoint as a pastor during the days of slavery in America, would you have said, hey, church-state separation, we don't get involved with legislating morality and things like that? Would you have conducted yourself the same way? Or would you have said, as disciples, as followers of Jesus, we need to combat this moral and social evil, both on the ground and politically?
Yeah, no, it's an excellent question. And yes, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, I see our role as believers as having a prophetic voice into society and into government. And so when we see injustice, when we see inequality, whatever, we are to speak it forth. And so I have no problem, but I've always, you know, personally, I've been pro-life since I've been a believer, and been very active in that movement, and was on the board of the Crisis Pregnancy Center for many years in Virginia and stuff. And so, you know, as far as speaking into societal issues, absolutely. I think it's the example is in the gospel and in the prophets constantly. And so obviously with slavery, you speak against it. I think speaking against abortion is valid. I think speaking against income inequality is valid. Racism is valid. All these, you know, there's like tons of things that we can address. I think it's valid. I think the big problem, though, is when leaders begin to publicly support and endorse political candidates, associate themselves with a particular political party. I think that is very, very dangerous. And I believe what happens is that the believers end up getting used as tools, mm-hmm, of the political leadership. I think that's what ends up happening.
Yeah, there's no question that we often get used. No question about that whatsoever. And I want to come back to the prophetic voice and speaking to issues. But first, with full candor and without worrying about offending many of my viewers and listeners who have voted for Donald Trump, what is your view of what our public association with Donald Trump has done to the reputation of the gospel? Just speak totally freely.
Yeah, I think it's been very, very damaging. I've produced numerous vlogs on my own YouTube channel and done numerous writings, and I've said again and again that, you know, I don't really care who people vote for. If people want to vote for Donald Trump or Joe Biden or some independent person, that's up to them. You know, I think, however, when we as believers publicly associate ourselves with any politician, especially one who is, you know, honestly, is just lives an outwardly ungodly life and is really in his character and in his speech is the antithesis of Jesus the Messiah. Wow, when we associate with that, person and that, whatever the reason is, for whether because it's because we're supporting his policies and whatever, blah, 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 I think we're making ourselves look like a bunch of hypocrites. And so really, I have to be honest that I believe over 50% of the United States, which is not going to vote for Donald Trump, is also going to be is turned off to the gospel for the very reason of association. I think that's the big problem.
Right. So obviously, one reason I wrote Evangelicals at the Crossroads when we passed the Trump test was to say, can we vote for Donald Trump and even be known as voting for Donald Trump without compromising our gospel witness? I believe there's a way to do that. And I believe and I agree with Jamie that to the extent we have been apologists for the president or defenders of the president or just blind supporters, that we really have damaged the cause of the gospel. No question. But Jamie, my experience has been that I got far more resistance, far more hatred from the world, far more pushback against the gospel just for being a prophetic voice than for saying I was voting for Donald Trump. In other words, following that logic that if I take a public stand that it's going to hurt the message of the gospel, then I would never speak out about controversial moral and cultural issues. So we've got about a minute before the break, but just start to respond to that.
Well, first, I would just say that being a Messianic Jew, I think you and I are both well aware of opposition to our faith, just especially from the Jewish community and stuff. So, you know, that's accepted. I think certainly the positions that we take are not going to be necessarily popular with a culture that's veering off from what we might call biblical standards. But I think the reality is I've heard it again and again. I've seen it in polls that many of the younger generation are just turned off because of the associations with Donald Trump and with the Republican Party and with what they consider intolerance and so on. And I just think we need to step back. Again, who you vote for, great. It doesn't matter. But we need to step back from public association. I think it's a huge error.
All right, friends, we're going to continue this discussion with Jamie Cowan, really Cohen, taking time in Israel. And we won't be taking calls, so we can really talk this through. And look, these are big issues. These are important issues. One of my friends in Australia said that his outreach, an American in Australia, has been hurt because of Christian association with Trump in America. What do we do about it?
God of light, hear our cry. Send the fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I'm speaking with a friend and colleague in Israel, Jamie Cohen. Jamie is an attorney. He has been a Messianic Jewish leader for many years. And we're discussing evangelicals and politics, followers of Yeshua, and political involvement. And when we openly identify with a party, when we openly identify with a candidate, and especially when leaders endorse that person, then Jamie's saying, look, it has a negative impact on the gospel because people will now think, okay, well, Franklin Graham, he's famous Christian leader, and Robert Jeffress, he's a famous Christian leader, and this one and that one, and they're openly supporting Donald Trump. So does that mean that to follow Jesus, I have to agree with Donald Trump? Or what if I'm interested in Jesus, but I don't like Donald Trump? Does he come along? I'm oversimplifying, but it's kind of the way it breaks down. So, Jamie, here's my question for you. You're saying that we should vote and we should be involved in the political system because it's the world in which we live, just like in Israel, you get to vote. It's a very interesting democratic system there, but you get to cast a vote. It's our public association that's problematic. So let's go back to, say, controversial issues like homosexual activism. When Franklin Graham was banned from speaking at certain events in England, this year, different venues canceled out. The reasons that they canceled, the given reasons, were primarily the fact that he opposed gay marriage and things like that. And then secondarily, that he had spoken against Islam. But aren't those things that we should be doing as followers of Jesus? In fact, in other words, the fact that he was a Trump supporter really wasn't the issue at all. That didn't come up at all. When Samaritan's Purse got rejected from being in New York as they were serving COVID victims, it was entirely over the LGBT issues. The Trump thing really was distant, if even there at all. So again, if we're thinking that's going to hurt the gospel, and yet you want us to be a prophetic voice, by being a prophetic voice, that's going to raise these other issues as baggage with the gospel, won't it?
Yeah, no, it's perfectly valid. And, you know, I think the question becomes is, you know, what is our primary mission? You know, whatever it is. I mean, obviously Samaritan's Purse, the example that you're giving is like humanitarianism, and, you know, in other words, reaching people with the gospel through good works, like through service projects and stuff like that, which is great. So the question then becomes is, why does somebody like that need to take like a really public position as a Christian leader against, you know, homosexuality or homosexual activism and stuff like that? I'm not for that, but don't get me wrong. But in other words, what is the mission of whatever you're doing? And does it end up compromising your ultimate mission by the stands that you might be taking? So as an example, I'll give you a perfect example. You know, our congregation in Virginia was right across the street from Virginia's largest abortion clinic, directly across the street. We had picketers that would come out and stand in front of our congregation and theirs on Saturday mornings when people would come, and it would be like chaos and stuff. So, I mean, you know, so what happened was early on, we had some people who were very involved in anti-abortion activism, and they wanted to put pamphlets on our entrance tables of like dead babies, you know, of dead, you know, unborn babies and stuff like that, as to show that we were pro-life and so on. And so I said, no way. It's not that I'm a pro-abortion, absolutely the opposite. But in other words, my mission, our mission as a congregation, was to see Jewish people come to faith in Jesus. Most Jews are pro-abortion. So they walk in the door, they see this dead baby, you know, on some pamphlet, and out they go. They never even hear the message. So the question is what is our essential message? And then to make sure that doesn't end up getting compromised through stuff that unfortunately are somewhat, you know, in my view, would be side issues. So that's how I respond.
Right. So let me push back on that with all respect, Jamie, and say that, okay. First, you know, the question is, where does one draw the line, right? If there were concentration camps across the street, if there were crematoria for Jews that were being killed across the street in Nazi Germany, do we not speak up because many people in Germany thought that Hitler was a good guy and didn't realize all the evils? And if we mixed Hitler in with the gospel, then people would get confused on this. And, you know, so the goal of the Great Commission is to make disciples. And the question is, how do disciples live? And disciples are now going to seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness. They're going to be those who hunger and thirst for righteousness. The kingdom of God is not a matter of eating and drinking, but of righteousness, peace, and joy in the Holy Spirit. They're going to be moved to address these issues. So at what point did they now graduate to addressing these? Because what I hear day and night, Jamie, I was called by the Lord in 2004, to my surprise, to begin addressing homosexual issues. And I got a commission from the Lord, reach out and resist, reach out to the people with compassion, resist the agenda with courage. I have been in constant demand since then, because there is a massive crisis in the society and in the church. And not a day goes by where someone is not saying, Dr. Brown, thank you. Thank you for speaking out. There are so few. We feel like we're losing our minds. We feel like no one is articulating our position. We're seeing this ideology spread through our society. We're watching our kids fall away from Jesus because they are so influenced by the world around them, and they're getting so pulled in these anti-Christian movements, and our very freedoms of religion are being taken away by this activism. Thank God you've been a lifeline for me, and now I have something to help my family with. How can I not speak out? The fact I get hated and mocked for it, so be it. But look, we want Jewish people to hear the message of Jesus, but we know that Jesus is the thing they're resisting most. And yet we know it's the proclamation in the power of the Spirit that's going to turn hearts. So this is where I struggle. I agree with so much of what you're saying about getting overly political, being an appendage of a political party, being used by that party, being associated with a particular candidate more than we're associated with Jesus. Those are all real issues, and I continue to address that. And you and I agree on those things. But where I'm having a problem is the line you're drawing, because if I'm making disciples, those disciples in the days of slavery, they would want to address that. That was a volatile issue in the church back then. But you have to address it. You're going to say, well, there's a slave camp where they're coming in and come off the boat in chains and they're being auctioned off. That's right across the street from us. But if we draw attention to that first and foremost in our congregation, it's going to alienate people that are pro-slave. That to me is now where I'm entering into compromise in the process.
No, you raise a valid point, and your particular calling is completely understandable and justifiable. There's a big difference, though, however, between somebody like yourself that you described, where you felt like God called you to address this direct issue. That doesn't mean that every Christian leader, therefore, whatever they're doing, whatever organization they're a part of, whatever ministry that they're part of, has to also take like a public position, not that they're in favor of it. I'm not suggesting that in any sense, but at least, to confront it and stuff like that. I mean, for instance, again, going back into my experience and my own congregation, you know, I would speak about sexual issues in the congregation. I would include in that issues of homosexuality or abortion or whatever, but it was part of a broader kind of message to assist the congregants in wrestling with all the dynamics of the various issues that they're addressing and how to understand it from the Word of God, rather than having a blanket like message out that homosexuality is sin, is not of God, and so on and so forth, which again is fine if you're called to do that. But I think the issue is always is what is the ministry that you're called to be involved in. Of course, like what you're saying, when you extend it down to disciples, we expect disciples of Jesus to also be, you know, for instance, generally pro-life, not to be in favor of gay marriage and so on like that. But then also to enable to equip them about what happens when friends do things like this. For instance, I gave a message just a couple years ago when all these issues were arising in the States. I came back to the States and gave a message in several places called Navigating Our Cultural Changes. And I talked about, you know, what happens when somebody in your family comes out as gay or whatever. In other words, do you ostracize them? Do you kick them out of the family? You know, I mean, I'm a person that got kicked out of my family for 30 years because I was a believer, follower of Jesus. So I know what the pain of being ostracized and kicked out of families. And so how do you address it? I think those are the kinds of, to me, those are some of the issues that have to be addressed in a broader perspective.
Right. And of course, I'm with you on that. I just hosted a documentary that was released a couple days ago called In His Image, put out by American Family Studios. So I was the host of it, dealing with what the Bible says about being created in God's image as male, female, etc. And then testimonies from ex-gays and ex-trans people. But when I was doing a radio interview with the director and the producer of the documentary, the director said, when we were trying to figure out who to have on to host this and to help us put this together, they said immediately, you were the name that came to mind because of compassion. So in other words, they know that we start with compassion towards people, looking at people as individuals loved by God and for whom Yeshua died. And then we address the issues in the culture. But I want to continue our discussion. We've got about a minute before the break, so I'll just put this out for you. I want to move over to Israel for a minute, and then we'll come back to America. But first, when we come back, if you could take a minute to explain how the political system works in Israel, and then I want to ask you a few theoretical things in terms of if this happened, would it change your view of speaking out? Are you doing things the same in Israel? Obviously, it's a totally different scene in Israel as opposed to America, which is so dominated by evangelical leaders and faith and things like that. So we'll continue our dialogue and discussion. And friends, let's agree on this. As I say in Evangelicals at the Crossroads, will we pass the Trump test? Part of passing the Trump test is, can we unify around Jesus even if we disagree about the president? Can we say, let's be one in him and pursue what we all agree on are the fundamentals, the things that God wants us to live by and give ourselves to, even if we differ on the president. All right, we'll be right back and continue this dialogue.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Hey, friends, welcome to the Line of Fire. I'm not taking calls today. I'm in dialogue via Skype with an old friend and colleague, Jamie Cohen. And he's been a Messianic Jewish leader, attorney, rabbi for many years now, living in Israel and active there. We've been having a discussion about the intersection of the gospel and politics, believers and the culture wars, what's healthy, what's unhealthy. And I want to ask a few questions that would relate specifically to Israel. But Jamie, if you could just explain in simple terms, how many parties there are normally in Israel, and then how you vote in Israel compared to America.
Okay, great. Yeah, actually, I'm very involved in the Israeli political scene. I'm an activists with one of the political parties here, Yesh Atid, which means there's a future headed by Yair Lapid, and I've been active in the last several elections. By the way, not actively in ministry now, so there's a little bit of a difference. But anyway, as far as the way it's structured, the Israeli form of government is very different than the United States. There's multiple parties, unlike the U.S., which generally just has two parties. Israel has multiple parties. Right now in the Knesset, there's about 10 to 11 parties represented, which means that in any one election, in fact, it's never happened where one party actually has a majority of the parliamentary seats. So that means that you have to form a coalition of different parties together. Most of the time, it can be as little as four, sometimes up to six or seven. Right now, it's quite high, the numbers. And so that creates just tremendous turmoil and trying to get a government through. A government in Israel is supposed to last for a full 4 years, but no government has ever managed to last a full 4 years because of the coalition system. One party says, I'm tired of what you're doing, what the leaders are doing, and so I'm pulling out, and then the government falls, and then they have to have another election. So that's the way it works. Crazy. So
all right. So interesting. And I want to make clear, Jamie, that if I press on details, I'm not trying to have a gotcha moment or catch you in a contradiction. I'm looking for clarification. Okay, you know my intentions are honorable here. So
yes,
you're known as a Messianic Jew, right? It's not a secret that you're a believer in Israel.
Correct.
Okay, I mean it's not
correct.
You don't just broadcast it everywhere, or you know when someone walks in the law offices, that's the first thing they hear. But that's known. You were a Messianic rabbi, and you're known as a Messianic Jew, just as a disciple. Forget not being in public ministry, but just as a disciple known for your witness, aren't you now confusing things with people who think, well, there's going to be baggage. This guy's a Messianic Jew and he's prominent and he's with Yesh Atid and I don't like Yesh Atid. So therefore that mixes my picture of who Yeshua is. Isn't it the exact same thing you're talking about here in America, just on a smaller scale?
Not really, because it's not as if the Messianic community is, the Lord wills that it be a huge community, but it's not, it's tiny. You're talking about, 15 to 20,000 people, of which most of the people vote in different parties anyway, and so on. So we're talking about just one Joe Schmo, Jamie Cohen in this case, who happens to be a Messianic Jew and is working with the party. Ultimately, my real aim was to be able to bridge into the political system, to be able to give a voice to Messianic Jews so that they wouldn't be persecuted, because we're persecuted over here. We're not allowed to immigrate as Messianic Jews. If they find out that you are going to be barred immigration. And so, that's it. So there's a big difference between that and having a huge, evangelical group that is basically the largest constituency of the Republican Party. We're talking about like a world of difference here.
All right. So, I mean, obviously, if there's a poll done as people are leaving the voting places, and if you find out through the polling that 81% of white evangelicals voted for Trump, they were not necessarily, let's say they weren't even announcing it. Let's say Franklin Graham and Robert Jeffress and others were not publicly speaking for Trump. You just found out through an exit poll. So people are, they don't have to keep secret who they vote for. I mean, that would be completely absurd. But let me go back just to pressing this a little further here. Let's say, since your goal as a Messianic Jew in Israel, your greatest goal is that our people know Yeshua. That's our greatest goal of all, not financial security or political security, but ultimately, like any follower of Jesus, our greatest goal is that our people know him. Let's just say all of the parties were decidedly against freedom of religion for Messianic Jews. They clearly wanted no immigration of Messianic Jews coming in and try to kick out those that weren't native-born Israelis and things like that. They were just all hostile. And let's say Yesh Atid was the one party that was really going to take a stand so that you could stay in the land and be witnesses. And would it be wrong for Messianic leaders, Messianic pastors to say, listen, if we want to stay here in Israel right now, it's important to vote. And I know there are many issues, but I want to tell you why I'm voting for Yesh Atid. Why would that be now crossing a line that's somehow forbidden? That's what I'm still not getting.
Yeah, I mean, no, it's a really good question. And I think my answer would be this, that I think as a, when you, especially when you're a congregational leader, you're viewed as someone that represents God to the community, you know, and you're expected to be a model, you know, kind of a modeling God's character and so on, and also a voice for the Lord. And so, you know, for instance, when I was leading a congregation, I believed that I was speaking the words of God when I was speaking from the pulpit and challenging people to walk with God and be like God, so on like that. But on the other hand, I wouldn't get up there and say, okay, well, you need for your decisions about house buying or your decisions about doing this or that in society, this is what you need to do. And because I think I would have crossed the line into imposing my will onto their lives in between them and God. And I think it's very, the same is true about voting, about like political candidacy. In other words, if I, as the spiritual leader, say I'm voting for this person and so on, the people are going to, they're going to view that because of their perspective towards me as kind of an imprimatur, God's imprimatur upon that particular candidate, as if it's now God's will that we vote for this particular candidate. I think that's a huge mistake. And I think that's what has happened historically, you know, in many societies where you get the merger of state and religion is where you end up having people who represent both the state and religion, and it becomes like a disaster. It's, you know, it's really disastrous. And I think that's the trend, unfortunately, in the United States.
Yeah, it is a dangerous trend. Again, I agree with that. Where I would see things differently would be, one, as a congregational leader, I would want to disciple my people strongly enough to say, hey, here's why I'm voting this way. But I want you to really look at the issues, pray them through, come to your own conclusions. Yes, I know you respect my views. This is where I'm coming from, but I want you to really work this through, think this through between you and the Lord. Look at the issues. I don't see what would be unhealthy about doing that, especially if they are life and death. You know, right now, the Democrat Party is the most radical pro-abortion party we've ever seen. This is not the party of the Bill Clinton days. And you're talking about extreme positions. You're talking about real attacks on freedom of religion. You're talking about some very, very aggressive LGBTQ platforms. I have no problem. I've said it over and over. If someone says, I can't vote for Donald Trump in good conscience, so I'm not voting for president, or I'm casting a third party protest vote, I've said over and over, hey, I respect that. I honor that. But here's why I differ with a believer voting Democrat for the following reasons. Now, you work it out between you and the Lord. But what I've seen, probably 99, well, here, let me back up. The vast majority of churches that I know around America don't adequately prepare their people to vote on issues. They don't adequately say, hey, we just want you to know where each party stands on each issue. You know what our teaching is. Now you review this and vote accordingly. The vast majority of congregations don't do that. Of those that do it, probably 99% don't say how they're voting. They just say, hey, look at the issues, look at where the parties stand, and vote accordingly. And the leaders don't even reveal how they're voting. So I see it primarily as the issues are momentous issues. And again, to kind of back it up, would you If you could foresee some terrible disaster coming, so we use the extreme example. If you were in Germany and you had the foresight to see the danger of Hitler and the Nazis, and you were a pastor or a leader, would it have been wrong, like a Bonhoeffer or others, forget the assassination plots, but would it have been wrong to speak up against specific candidates and to warn, or even to say, hey, we've got a brother in our midst who's willing to run against this, let's stand and support? Is there never a time when this line can be crossed as a congregational leader?
Well, here's the problem. I mean, you raise a lot of issues here, and I'm not sure if I can remember them all, but I would just say this, that first of all, if you have Adolf Hitler, yeah, sure. And the problem is, though, of course, in Germany, is that almost all the churches supported Adolf Hitler for a variety of different reasons. So, you know, this has been part of the problem with Christian involvement in politics, is that they often support somebody, or they get so involved that they end up supporting autocratic dictatorial leaders. I mean, it's really a disaster. But here's my problem with it, with saying what you're saying about, you know, telling the congregation, here's the issues. I remember this, again, going back years ago when I was in the congregation, shortly after I'd come there, I'd gone from working Congress to the seminary that you were heading up, that I was part of, you know, I was in your classes,
yeah,
to the congregation in Virginia. And right away, there was an organization, I'm not going to mention them because I don't want to mention people or organizations, but they provided voting guides for the congregation for the very things that you're talking about. In other words, how to know where candidates stand and on the issues. So I read it, and it was so biased that it was beyond belief. I mean, it was just like beyond belief biased. Because here you're talking to a person who came from the political world, who understands why people vote the way they do. There's like tabling motions, there's motions to reconsider, and all this kind of stuff that goes on. All these things can be twisted to make it look like this person is against this issue, or there's a certain percentage of times that they've voted against this issue, and so on. Using all these statistics,
yep,
which badly distort the person's voting records and even the issues and so on. And so I prohibited voting guides in the congregation for that reason. If people want to know how to vote, they can tune into the debate tonight and listen, or they can read the party platforms like what you're talking about and make a decision for themselves. They don't need me to come along and say, this is how I'm going to vote, and this is why I'm voting this way, and now it's up to you. Because what's already happened is I've already heavily influenced them because they are looking at me as a spokesperson for God. That's the problem.
Got it. All right. Appreciate you laying that out. And I do want to come back to the larger political system. Speaking with Jamie Cohen, he was born Cohen, name changed to Cowan, and then back to Cohen, living in Israel, serving in Israel, doing very important work there. And again, we're in harmony on so much, but have some differences. We'll try to flesh them out the last few minutes. We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Yeah, time flies. I cannot believe we're coming to our last segment already as I speak with my old friend and colleague, Jamie Cohen, in Israel, in Tel Aviv. How many years have you been living in Israel now, Jamie?
Just about 9 years.
Just about 9 years. Amazing. Yeah, I had lost track of the time. All right, so let me try to work something out here on a very, very simple level. Let's say in your school district, you're a pastor, you're a messianic rabbi. In your local school district, the county where you're based and most of your people live, there is a really aggressive sex ed curriculum that's been introduced into the schools, and it's going to start, it's K through 12, it's really bad. And then some extreme critical race theory things are being brought in, and everything's going to be taught through that lens. And then you actually find out that there's some overt anti-Christian bias that's built into some of the curriculum. And parents get very upset over this. Their kids are coming home upset. You're looking at the programs and the plans. So you go in and meet with your teachers. Teachers say, oh, we need to speak to the administrator. The parents speak with the administrator and say, oh, this comes from the school board. This is dictated by the local school board. And now there's going to be a vote. It's time for new school board members. And a few people in your congregation say, we got to do something about this. Let's get involved with the school board. And would it be wrong to tell your congregation, hey, we want you to know two folks, you know them right here in our midst. They're going to be running for local school board. And we know the agenda of the others. They've made it clear in their public statement. So let's get involved. Let's back them. Would that be wrong?
Yeah, that's again another good question. I would say, look, I would say as far as when this issue were to arise, that even as a spiritual leader, I'd feel free to go and stand before the school board and say, look, you know, I just don't, this is inappropriate and for a variety of different reasons, blah, 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 blah. And the same with members of the congregation who wanted to do that. I think that's great too. But I would not be in the position of saying, okay, look, we got some candidates here in the congregation, raise your hand, stand up, you know, they're running for the school board. We need to get behind them. I just would not do that.
Got it. Yeah. And again, that's where I would have some of the differences to think, well, why is a line being crossed here? Where does scripture lay out that line? And using your same argument that you would not want pictures of dead babies when people come into the congregation because you're trying to reach Jews and most Jews are liberal pro-abortion. Well, most Jews are going to be liberal with the school curriculum too. And you're probably going to alienate those same Jews if you go to the local board meeting, school board meeting and speak out. So I just don't know how we can avoid the other issues. Being apologists for Donald Trump, big error. Being defenders of the president, being known more as his supporters than we're known as followers of Jesus, big, big mistake. It's definitely hurt our witness. As I've said, he's done more to help evangelical causes than any president in memory and done more to hurt the evangelical cause than any president in memory. So I'm with you in a lot of the concerns. But I guess my own experience, just standing for righteousness issues, or my friends who've been on the front lines of the pro-life movement and have literally helped save thousands of babies over the years, I mean, literal numbers, and you can see the pictures and the families and all of this, they've been hated, reviled for those issues, and how they vote is almost completely secondary to that. And that's where I find the challenge. If we're going to have a prophetic voice, now there's going to be controversy associated with the message of the gospel, and I don't know how to avoid that.
No, I mean, obviously there is, but again, I think there's just a huge difference between endorsing or publicly supporting political candidates and so on. I think as far as a congregation taking up, you know, people in the congregation, even a leader being involved in, let's say, pro-life activities, I think that's fine. I think people going to the March for Life in Washington, D.C. annually, I think that's fine. I think it's also fine to go to Black Lives Matter protests and you know, and support racial equality, but also do it as a believer. I think these are all fine. You know, it's just that when we join together as a supporting specific candidates and then following that into a political party, because the whole process of the politicization of the gospel has occurred over 20 to 30 years. I mean, we're not talking, it didn't just happen with the Moral Majority. It happened over time. It grew and grew and grew until it became associated with the Republican Party, which I think is a disaster, even though I'm a Republican and I've been my entire life, you know, and served in the Republican Congress. So, you know, what can you say?
You know, what's interesting is that I'm actually registered as an independent, even though I voted Republican for various candidates for some years. I'm registered as an independent, just as my own voice of conscience to say that I do not publicly identify as a member of either party. And I ultimately don't put my trust in the political system to bring about lasting change. I just see that as part of it. In other words, if you said to me, okay, Mike, give me 10 ways that you as a believer see that America can be changed. Well, I'd start with prayer and fasting. I'd go to repentance in the church. I go to winning the lost, making disciples. I go to acts of compassionate service in our community. I go to standing up for issues, being a prophetic voice. And somewhere towards the bottom of the top 10 would be voting, but it would be in there. You, as someone who is an insider of the political system in America and now in Israel, so they're similar but different, are you skeptical in general of the political system ever changing or standing for righteousness or one party really having influence for good and one for bad? In other words, you're kind of cynical, like, it's always just going to be a mix. Or do you think that real change can happen partly through the political system?
It's a really good question, and it's a complicated question. I think that, I think it was Martin Luther King that actually talked about, you know, the society bending towards righteousness. And I think that in some respects, not all, but in some respects, the United States has become a better country throughout the years towards racial equality, equality for, you know, women, treating people respectfully and stuff like that. The problem is that there is a mixture, you know, and some of the cultural changes are very problematic. And so with both parties, I think there's both positives and negatives for both parties. You know, until 2016, I voted consistently Republican. I didn't vote Republican in 2016, and I won't this time either, mainly because of Donald Trump. But somebody asked me just recently, what about in 2024? Look, if the Republicans put together something, you bring somebody who's not like, you know, maniacal, to be honest, I'll probably support him because I do want to support people who are like pro-life and so on. And I do believe in more of a conservative type government, smaller government, stuff like that. On the other hand, you know, the Democratic Party has supported immigrants. I work with immigrants. I've been working with immigrants for 25 years. I'm an immigration attorney, so I have a sensitivity towards them, helping the poor, helping the marginalized. You know, I think there's a lot in the Bible that we can be for and be affecting change, including the unborn, for sure.
So Jamie, what if God was expecting you as a leader positioned directly across from an abortion clinic to be the strongest voice in the community and to say, okay, every day babies are being killed in the womb. There's nothing in the Bible that grieves God more than shedding of innocent blood. Obviously idolatry, but then that leads to all the other sins. Shedding of innocent blood, dealing with the least of these. And it doesn't mean necessarily that you had to have pictures of dead babies when people walked in, but that your congregation was number one active in sharing the good news, giving women options, helping to work for adoption or getting women to keep their babies and things like that. What if, obviously, I'm not telling you what God was telling you to do, but what if you're a pastor and that's your assignment, you're directly across from an abortion clinic, God says, I put you there for a reason. So of course, it's going to alienate certain people, but you've got a mission. Lives are being lost, lives are being taken, you need to do something. Does that ever override your concerns about crossing lines?
Well, first of all, we were pretty much known as a pro-life congregation. That was no secret. Like I said, I was as a board member of a crisis pregnancy center, which was only a couple blocks from the abortion clinic. And so I was very active in that part of the movement. We had people in our congregation who would, you know, stand in front of the clinic and would intercept women coming in for abortion. So, you know, this is what happened. You know, that people were involved. They knew that. But again, there's a big difference between doing that and standing up in the front of the congregation and saying, we're going to bring down this clinic. We're going to do everything we can. Because again, my view as a leader of the congregation was to see Jewish people come to know the Lord. And if I was just continue to harp on this issue, they would never even come through the doors.
I understand that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm just jumping in only because of time. And I didn't mean that would be the number one mission. That would just be an important part of it. And look, you know, Jamie, you know my perspective, that there are many things I differ with about the president. My last article, I mentioned his name. I stand against all these things, say how I would plead with him to act differently. But then what I feel are really existential issues right now in America, the cancel culture, mobocracy, real attack on freedom of religion, the worst assault we have on our laws to protect the lives of the unborn, various other things that are of very large nature. For those reasons, I vote for Donald Trump, but I'm absolutely not his apologist or defender. And to me, I want the world to know a trillion times more that I'm a follower of Yeshua than a voter for Trump. He's going to come and go. His name's going to be forgotten. But there's one name we're going to live or die for forever. So, Jamie, let's agree on what comes first, what matters most. And I stand with you side by side with that. And then hopefully those that listen and watch can think through what we each say and agree or disagree accordingly. But we're out of time, but thank you, man, for coming on, sharing your views. I hope this has been helpful and you got to share your own thoughts as well.
Great. It's good talking to you, Mike. Very good. Thank you so much.
Appreciate it. All right, friends, we are out of time, but weigh in the comments section, wherever you are checking this out, weigh in, let us know your thoughts, and hopefully this has been helpful for you as well. God bless. Mm-hmm.